are we all in on Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers rest of season? Nico Collins, how high are we on Nico Collins rest of season after a monstrous performance here in week 13? And lastly, who gets most of the credit for the way the Colts are playing right now? All that and more coming up on the week 13 Sunday recap. It's Monday, December 4th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. We had a day. Even with six teams not playing, we had some exciting football. We had some bad football. We had some delayed football, and we ended the day with some controversial football. So a lot for us to break down, and I'm excited to do it.
Hell yeah, buddy. We had football of all kinds. And yes, controversial football in the first game we're going to talk about here. But really, like, beautiful football. If you look past the controversy of Packers 27, Chiefs 19, like you said, the ending of it is absolutely controversial because, I mean, the refs, way too involved in the last minute. But I want to table the ref talk for a second here, because really, Scott, what we should be getting on here and talking about in the wake of that game is, like, this is Jordan Love's signature moment, right? I mean, if he didn't have the signature moment on Thanksgiving when they beat the Lions, I mean, on Sunday Night Football, week 13, to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, like, the national audience has been treated to Jordan Love twice now, you know, in back-to-back weeks. And, like, at this point, I don't know what his ceiling is, Jordan Love. I think we're still in discovery mode of what his ceiling is, but I feel like we can say with certainty now that, like, he can play, that he's more than just he's a viable starting quarterback for the Packers. At this point, Jordan Love is starting to look like a guy. This is his fifth straight game over 7 yards per attempt, fourth straight without a turnover, second in a row with three touchdown passes. Like, again, I know there's a whole ref story and all that stuff with the Chiefs and blah, blah, blah. But, like, I really do want to give Jordan Love his credit in a game that I felt like he displayed all the arm talent that you want out of a starting quarterback, like, threw it off platforms, fitted into tight windows, like, made some hero throws, just moved the offense. Like, it really feels like the Packers right now are coming together, and their schedule up ahead is a total green light. So, I mean, man, Scott, I want to give Jordan Love his flowers here because he absolutely deserves it.
Total cosign. They are a couple plays away from being on a 5-game winning streak. They easily could have won at Pittsburgh. That's a good defense. Love played well that day. Played very well on Thanksgiving against the Detroit defense. It has some problems, but, you know, they were still underdogs in that game. Green Bay was the right side, and Green Bay was the right side tonight. And we're not going to get into the officiating. There were some calls that went the Chiefs' way. There are some calls that didn't go their way that went Green Bay's way. People can debate all that stuff. I felt like the right team won, and I didn't have any dominant stake in this game. You and I are in so many different leagues and pools and contests that I'm sure any result hurts me and helps me in some way. And I'll figure that all out tomorrow. I'm impressed with Jordan Love. And I'll tell you what, I never say this. Chiefs are on primetime a lot. I was more interested watching the Packers play offense today than the Chiefs. Yeah. And Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes offense. And think about the Packers offense. And I know they mentioned it a lot tonight, but it's such an important point. It's such a young team. All their receivers are rookies and second-year players. And this is Jordan Love's first year starting. So this stuff takes time to develop. I'm excited about the Packers being a playoff team. As you mentioned, their schedule gets incredibly soft. And Love had to steer the ship. I mean, A.J. Dillon, 18 for 73, a long of 10. He wasn't doing anything special. They did a couple of runs to their receivers, as they always do. And hopefully Christian Watson is okay. He pulled up with maybe a back leg injury late in that game. But they've gotten him going. You know, Jaden Reed didn't have a great game today, but he's had moments. Dobbs can play. Wicks can play. I think Jordan Love, and I'll be honest with you, if you – listen to this pod every week and heard me talk about Jordan Love, I'm sure there's times I've thought I was like a step and a half out on Jordan Love. But at this point, I think he's at least good. And I think he has a chance to be very good. And I'm looking forward to watching Packers football in the playoffs. They are one of the, in a season where it's been hard to find quality quarterback play, it's been hard to find consistent offense,
Matt LaFleur undefeated in December. You got to tell me that means something. I heard people clowning about, is Matt LaFleur going to get fired? Get out of here. Matt LaFleur is a good football coach. And the Packers, are they a great team? No, but they're a good team. I'm starting to get worried. Now, the Chiefs have an easy schedule, too. They play the Bills in the next week, and then they get a bunch of favorable matchups. They get a lead in the division. They're going to make the playoffs. But when they got the ball, I realized they were down 8 points at the end of this game. But usually when Patrick Mahomes gets the ball down one score, I've seen this before. Patrick Mahomes goes right down the field. It will be easy. I never felt that way tonight. And I know that the last minute and a half was kind of rough to watch with the stoppages and the flags and all that. And again, we don't need to go deep into that. Everybody saw the game. But I'm not afraid of this offense. Kelce looks 34. He's still really good, but he doesn't look like Pete Travis Kelce to me. They've gotten Rice involved, but he's just a piece. Rashee Rice is not somebody you get petrified of off the bus. They need MVS to make some plays. He hasn't been making them. Pacheco's a pretty good back. I don't know. The Chiefs just feel like a pedestrian team to me. At this point, I'd be very surprised if they represented the AFC. Now, it's easy to say there's six other teams that will make the playoffs, but something's missing with Kansas City right now, and I don't know how they're going to fix it.
So, yeah, it's a great point about the Chiefs, man, because like they pulled this off last year. And look, I don't want to get here and say like, oh, the Chiefs are they're really, really in trouble. Because if they hoisted the Lombardi in February, like, wouldn't be surprising, right? I mean, they have one of the best players on the planet. They have the best player on the planet. They have Andy Reid. They have the whole thing. Like, they can still win the Super Bowl, whatever. But yeah, they pulled this off last year with Travis Kelce playing at the height of his powers. I think we can all acknowledge that he's not playing at the height of his powers. And the point about Rashee Rice is great because he is a piece. He's a guy they're trying to get activated in very certain ways, and it's working. But today he has 0.5 air yards per target, according to Next Gen Stats. 0.5. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast, Scott. Even just last week, he has this, quote, breakout performance, right? Well, he's still not doing like all the way wide receiver stuff, right? He's doing a lot of catch and run things. He's working from the slot. He's working on crossers. But who's threatening this team down? Like, it's threatening from this team down the field right now. There is nobody still. That remains a huge problem when you're trying to work down the field. Like, whether it's something about the player or something about the coaching staff not trusting the player, they don't want to put Rashee Rice on the outside and have him run big boy routes. I think it's because when you watch him play, he's still not all the way there doing that yet. I think they've got to get him to a point where they can trust him to do that, because it's a problem right now when you want to go the length of the field and your best wide receiver is a rookie that you only want to work in the short area and do run after the catch stuff. That's a problem. And that was a problem tonight.
It feels like all their plays have to be 10, 12, 15 play drives. Mahomes into tonight was at 7.1 yards per attempt. He was at 8.1 last year. His career yards per attempt is 8. And tonight against the Packers, it was 6.4. To get a first down, this used to be a chunk play offense. You have 15, 20, 25-yard plays, and every once in a while they hit a home run. Now it's like, okay, 6 yards, 8 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards. It's all dink, dunk, long possession drives where if you do one thing wrong, you have one holding penalty, you have one guy drop a pass, the play stalls. I don't think this is going to be fixed until the end of the season. As you said, because Reed, Hall of Fame coach, Patrick Mahomes, I still think he's the best player in the league. He's not going to win MVP. He's not having the best fantasy season. You know, I was asked some start sit questions for Mahomes today, a couple of them. And the answer is going to be the other guy. Somebody wanted to know if they should play Trevor Lawrence or Mahomes. We'll see what happens on Monday night. But I'm sure that guy right now is wishing he was the unknown upside of Lawrence, who's been playing pretty well lately and getting some goal line equity. The Chiefs need to find – now, you don't replace Tyreek Hill. He's just a guy. He's a unicorn. He's a once-a-generation guy. But they need to find somebody who threatens downfield. And it can't be your 34-year-old tight end. And it can't be Rashee Rice, not primarily. And unfortunately, you can't make moves now. And MVS isn't that guy. So maybe Andy Reid will pull a rabbit out of his hat. I've seen Mahomes do it before, but I'm not going to be picking. This would be the first year in a long time where I didn't look at the AFC and say, well, yeah, I have to pick the Chiefs. Of course I have to pick the Chiefs. And I've realized everybody else has problems. Miami hasn't beaten enough good teams yet. And Buffalo may be the best team in the conference. They may not make the playoffs, right? Everybody's got problems. The teams in the AFC South, AFC North, you know, they don't
the Steelers may not have their quarterback. The Bengals don't have Joe Burrow. They probably won't make the playoffs. The Browns have used 17 quarterbacks, it feels like. So everybody's got something they have to deal with. But I think the Chiefs have a capped upside for the rest of the season.
Me too. And it's crazy because you'd think like, all right, the Bills aren't having that season. Burrow's hurt. Like, oh, Chiefs are going to moonwalk to the Super Bowl. Like I said, they can for sure still win the Super Bowl this year. They absolutely can. But I don't feel like, yep, set and forget it. I'll see you guys in Vegas in February when the Chiefs are participating in the Super Bowl. I don't feel that way right now about this team. Just quickly back to the Packers before we move on. They get the Giants. They get the Bucks. They get the Panthers. They get the Vikings. They get the Bears the rest of the way.
That's a college basketball schedule. Like these college basketball teams that play nobody until conference play starts. Like they play schools you don't even know they had a team, you know, or you play a school, you think it's one school and oh no, it's so-and-so A&T. You couldn't ask for a better schedule. And as I said, Kansas City's got a great schedule, except for the Bills. And we've been talking a lot about every week. There just seems like there's a couple of monstrous games. Obviously Philadelphia, Dallas is going to dominate the airwaves, but we're going to get a memo on the Bills and the Chiefs next week. The Chiefs, maybe they fix things, maybe they don't. If the Bills want to make the playoffs, they got to win this game. It's a kitchen sink game for them. They've just had a week off. I think the entire AFC, all the contenders are quietly saying, please don't let the Bills make the playoffs. Please don't let the Bills make the playoffs. I don't want to face Josh Allen. I don't want to face Stephon Diggs. I don't want to face Dalton Kincaid or Reuben Kincaid or anybody named Kincaid. Certainly not Josh Allen. You know, and sometimes I think Josh Allen, he'll never win MVP. Sometimes I think he's been the best player in football this year, but they've made the wrong 8 or 10 plays. So instead of being 10-2 or 11-1 or 9-3, they're 6-6. So next week's going to be a blast. Everybody on the field except for Washington and Arizona, somehow we'll get through without those teams, Matt. It won't be easy. And we got some great matchups to look forward to.
We really do. Just again, last thing on Jordan Love here. Like you said, there was definitely a stretch where maybe we came on this podcast being like, Jordan Love is not it. He's a great reminder of the phrase, progression isn't linear. You know, he comes out in the first two games. He has 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. The completion percentage wasn't there, but the EPA per play was there. It's like, oh, man, just keep Packers keep on rolling. They got another quarterback. Then from weeks 3 to weeks 9, 6 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. It was a slog, but that Pittsburgh game, you're so right. That Pittsburgh game was the turning point. Like I remember charting Jordan Reed in that game being like, Jordan Love played well in this game. I don't care what the stats say. Like he played well in that game. And basically ever since then, that's when the Packers have started to catch fire and they've become this team that like they are at this point. And, you know, I know Christian Watson scored the 2 touchdowns tonight. Like you could have told me that Jaden Reed got those 2 touchdowns or Dontavian Wicks or like Romeo Doubs. Like all of these young guys are growing up alongside Jordan Love right now to the point that like, you know, again, in some of these matchups down the stretch, like I might be trying to break ties in fantasy in favor of getting some of these Packers receivers into the lineup, which again, during that like week 3 to 9 stretch, there were like photoshops of Caleb Williams in Packers jersey, like on your timeline. Like that's where we were at with the Packers. And now I'm sitting here saying like any of those 4 receivers could have big games at any point, because I think these guys are all pretty close in terms of how talented they are. They just win in very, very different ways. And I think Watson has the highest theoretical upside of all of them, like from just a freak play perspective. It's awful he gets hurt on that, like trying to go down on the end of game like situation there. Man, I just, again, I'm very high on this Packers team and what these receivers have shown in a very short amount of time.
So well said. And remember, if Aaron Jones doesn't come back healthy, A.J. Dillon has kind of revealed himself as just a guy. This is an offense that will need to matriculate the ball down the field, as the great Hank Stram would say, through the air. And Love, I know we've talked a lot about him, but I just want to cap it with this. He's poised. He throws a really nice ball. He can throw from different platforms. He's athletic. He's not primarily a runner, but if you need him to make a play with his legs, he can do it. The only thing I think he really did wrong tonight is he took a sack you really can't take late in the fourth quarter. He's still got to get a little bit better with the sack avoidance, but that's kind of an experience thing. And LaFleur is a great offensive coach. I'm excited, man. I cannot wait. And now, okay, so you've beaten some big boys here. Win at Detroit, big boy win. Win on Sunday Night Football over the Chiefs, big boy win. Now you got to take care of business, get to handle success, beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And I don't know what it is. I'd like to know why Matt LaFleur doesn't lose in December. Obviously, he had a lot of good players around him. Any coach will tell you you need that. But maybe good coaching is also figuring out your personnel and getting them to be better later in the season than they were earlier in the season. So maybe Matt LaFleur's got a little bit of that special sauce cooking too. I'm in on Green Bay, man. Let's go.
I'm very much in on Green Bay. Next thing we're going to talk about here, it's really easy to figure out your personnel late in the season when you have better players than everybody else, which brings us to the first game of our headliners section here. 49ers 42, Eagles 19. Scott, this final score is definitely not what we expected, although I will say, shout out to you, buddy. You were saying on the pod last week, like, the 49ers are going to beat the hell out of the Eagles. You were very confident in that win, but were you surprised in how the 49ers were able to get it done over Philadelphia?
I don't think anybody saw a 42-19 game coming, but it seemed reasonable that the 49ers could win convincingly. They were favored on the road against a team that was 10-1. I know that ruffled some feathers. Here's the bottom line. These are two great teams. We're going to see them again, and I'm here for it. Both offenses have such a reservoir of weapons. The thing is, I just wonder, and who's to say if these teams play again, who's going to be healthy? And you know, that's what was so frustrating. The last game they played is that Purdy got hurt right away. But when the Niners have everybody going, who do you defend? Who do you prioritize? Today, Debo went crazy. We know that you're a huge Brandon Ayuk guy. George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey might be headed to the Hall of Fame. They're unbelievable football players. I will never really know how good Brock Purdy is because he's in the perfect setup. And that's the greatest thing and the worst thing about football debates is how much credit do you give Shanahan? How much credit do you give the offensive line? Trent Williams is a credible left tackle. How much credit do you give the guys who get all this yak after the catch and all that? There's no way to separate it. But Brock Purdy's good. And he's surrounded by the setup that everybody in football wishes they had. I was surprised that the Eagles brought Jalen Hurts back after the concussion checkout. I guess he was healthy, but the game was out of hand. At some point, I don't know what there is to prove, and that will be a theme that we'll talk about later on this podcast. But here's the bottom line. The Niners hit the high end of their range today. The Eagles didn't. Doesn't mean the Eagles couldn't win in the playoffs, and I hope these teams play again. I do think San Francisco is the best team in football, but you don't have to go that far down to get to the Eagles.
No, I'm with you. I think when the 49ers are playing like this, it's just, it's like you said, what do you do? And studying this game, like talking about on the preview show, writing about it in the preview article, it's like so many guys were set up for smash spots. Like so many guys were set up in these like massive projections. I mean, AJ Brown too, on his side, like these Eagles receivers kind of did their part at least, you know? But from the 49ers perspective, man, it's just like, okay, this is a pretty man coverage heavy defense. These cornerbacks have really struggled. Well, of course, Brandon Ayuk is going to cut him up with his route running. And that happened in several big spots. I mean, he only comes away with 46 yards and a touchdown. He only had 7 targets, but still, like one of the 3rd-and-7 on Darius Slay, that was like such a beautiful route. It was a crucial point of the game. The touchdown obviously got it rolling there. Debo, I mean, we will talk about one later. So I don't want to say there was no bigger mismatch on the week 13 slate than Debo Samuel versus the Eagles linebackers, because I'm looking at you, Washington Commanders. We'll talk about that later. But man, he was just obviously going to tear through that defense. You know what McCaffrey's going to do. You know what George Kittle's going to do again against those linebackers. So it just all, like, the more and more I thought about it, it's set up for a massive Brock Purdy game. It's set up for a massive San Francisco 49ers win. And I'm with you that I think there's a really good chance that we do see these two teams again. I mean, just because right now I still think they're – I mean, are they better? Is Philadelphia better than Dallas? I don't know that, Scott. And I would say – that if I'm thinking of, okay, 49ers offense, 49ers defense, Cowboys offense, Cowboys defense, Eagles offense, Eagles defense, I think the Eagles defense is the most problematic unit of those 6 units.
I can't wait for that Dallas-Philadelphia game, and I would think Dallas at home would have to be the favorite. We won't talk about the Thursday night game. We usually don't, but Dak was tremendous in that game. The Cowboys defense did not look great in that game, by the way. I was surprised that the Seahawks moved the ball as well as they did. And let's appreciate, there isn't that much fantasy advice needed with the players in these games, in the Eagles and Niners games, because you're just playing them and you're happy to play them. But the common refrain a lot of times with San Francisco is like, well, they're going to cannibalize each other. One person's going to be left out. Let's appreciate how narrow the tree is here. They targeted five guys. Now, I realized Juwan Jennings had a touchdown late in this game, a nifty move, made a guy miss, got in the end zone. So, you know, the Ayuk, Samuel, Kittle, McCaffrey crew is like, wait a minute, that's one of our touchdowns. We want that back. But Debo goes off, gets the three touchdowns. Christian McCaffrey was born in the end zone. Kittle doesn't score, but 4 for 68 at tight end. I'm never going to feel bad for you when that's your game. And Ayuk had a touchdown, as you said, a couple of just tremendous. He had a couple of really huge plays in this game when it was still competitive. So we love Brandon Ayuk, and we know what a man beater he is. San Francisco is mostly about getting the ball to their primary guys. And the box score looks a little bit maybe wider than it would have been because they could give some carries to Mason and to Mitchell when they were salting the game away because it was out of hand. But for the most part, this is a team where we know where the ball is going, and that's just wonderful for fans. And the flip side, look at the Eagles, right? I mean, they're chasing the game the whole way. 13 targets A.J. Brown, 11 targets Devonta Smith. Yes, yes, please. They'll eventually, I hope, get Dallas Goedert back, which will make them a lot more harder to defend. They never really got the running game going. And you know, it's funny, for all the rushing touchdowns Jalen Hurts has, and he had another tush push today, we know he's been playing through that knee injury. He hasn't looked like a proactive runner, like between the 20s. It just seems like that's not a pitch they have right now, or at least they're reluctant to call it. I'm curious to see if Hurts was, honestly, Philly people don't like it when I say this. I think Hurts was better last year. I think he's been playing hurt most of the season. He's been very good. But this whole idea that he's the MVP favorite and all this stuff, I think that's more 10-1 narrative talk than it is maybe how well Hurts has played. He's played very well this year. He was better last year, I think, because he was healthier last season.
He's the quarterback on the team with the best record, at least coming into today. Like, that's usually just how the MVP works. Yeah. But I'm with you that, like, I think it's inarguable that he was better last year. Like, inarguable. And I do think a lot of it is health. There's been stuff all year long. It is a new play caller. It's weird that, like, Brian Johnson seems to be in a bunch of, like, head coaching conversations, and seemingly a bunch of Eagles fans hate Brian Johnson, the new offensive coordinator. I don't think he's done a bad job or anything, but I think he has been reluctant. We'll talk about Shane Steichen in our next game here. He's been reluctant to just, like, keep pressing the same button over and over and over again when it works, like Shane Steichen was last year. And I think the real implication of that has been that they have gotten away from the run game, both just like running back wise and Jalen Hurts wise. You know, there has been a lot of times where, I mean, in this game, 6 carries for 13 yards for DeAndre Swift. And like, it wasn't as if the 49ers were just blowing them away from start to finish. There was a good bit to start the game when they weren't moving the ball at all. They were going three and out. Like, it was not to start this game, at least, like a San Francisco 49ers fireworks show. So I think there has been some growing pains from just that play caller perspective, but I do wonder how much of it is just, hey, we don't have the same numbers advantage because we don't have that extra element of Jalen Hurts can take off and scramble, or we're certainly not calling design runs for Jalen Hurts at any time.
I just want to cap it with one more thing. We've talked so much this year about the quarterback play has been erratic, and there's been so many injuries, and we lost Nick Chubb early on. We lost Aaron Rodgers early on. Teams are on their third, fourth quarterbacks. Joe Flacco's on a football team now. It feels like every week, for I don't know how many weeks in a row, we have at least one game, sometimes more than one, but at least one game where it's like, oh my God, I have to watch that game. Do not call me. Do not bother me. Do not tell me I've won a sweepstakes for $1 million. I'm watching this football game. Today it was the 49ers-Eagles. Next week it's going to be the Eagles and Cowboys. I just love that. If the way the schedule is shaken out, we just have these games that are huge events. We watch them communally. We tweet about them. We talk about them on these podcasts. And in a season that a lot of people have said, oh, there's no form and there's no – the league, you know, Tom Brady has criticized the league. And there are some teams that are really difficult to watch. Let's appreciate there are a bunch of teams that are fun to watch. And it feels like two of them are playing every week now. And I just love it as a football fan.
And next week, I mean, it's just going to be an absolute treat. You know, we won't talk about it too much here, but obviously Eagles, Cowboys on Sunday Night Football.
There's a new Bills, game of the year every week. It's a game of the year every week.
Game of the year every week. I mean, shoot, like Bills and Chiefs play earlier that day. Like Seattle, I they're kind of sinking right now, but they're coming off maybe their best offensive performance, and they play the 49ers at 4:05. So a lot of big time games next week. Can't wait for that. But man, week 14, unbelievable. Yo, I can't believe it's week 14. It's crazy. But let's stay here in week 13 and move on to our next game here, which brings us to, I mentioned Shane Steichen, Colts 31, Titans 28. This game actually, Scott, Turned into like a pretty fun back and forth affair. A lot of guys hit for fantasy. This game went to overtime. The Colts eventually win it on a walk-off Michael Pittman touchdown. I just want to start this by giving a lot of praise to Shane Steichen, who I think has just shown time and time again that like he gets it. Because you think about this, Scott, like, do you remember the 2022 Colts? I'm sure you've tried to scrub them from your memory, but do you remember how unwatchable that team was? I mean, how hideous of an offense that team was. This is a lot of the same players. Like, you think about it, the receiver room, they had Josh Downs, who I'm a huge Josh Downs fan. He's like a third round rookie, right? Like, Alec Pierce and Michael Pittman were there last year. The running backs, Jonathan Taylor and Zach Moss, were there last year. A lot of the same offensive linemen. Was a super problematic unit. The quarterback, like, anybody who tells you like, oh, Gardner Minshew is really keeping the ship afloat, I don't know about that, man. He tries to like give a game away two or three times every single game. He's been fine. He's definitely like got a lot more juice than 2022 Matt Ryan, but that isn't saying very much. The difference here is really play calling and play design. I mean, gorgeous, gorgeous play design on the Michael Pittman touchdown to end the game. Michael Pittman, by the way, is just going to moonwalk to a big payday in the offseason. I'm so here for it. That guy is such a baller. But man, you know, you would have thought that, like, if the Colts were making this surprising playoff run, which they are, according to the New York Times now, they have a 66% chance to make the playoffs. You would have thought, like, oh, man, Anthony Richardson must be having a special season. Anthony Richardson's like a distant memory for this team.
All very well said. And we're always looking for right answers with coaches, with coordinators. We know Shane Steichen's fingerprints were all over the Eagles' success the last few seasons. And what he's done with Richardson, taking off his plate early. I'm a Gardner Minshew fan, but even that said, every time I watch him play, I feel like I'm talking myself into Gardner Minshew for like 10 minutes, and then I'm like, oh, well, this is why he's a backup for like the next 10 minutes. He plays with his hair on fire. He doesn't play scared. He's fun to root for. He's going to take some sacks he shouldn't take. He's going to throw into coverage when he shouldn't. But then you have a game like this where the full Gardner Minshew experience was on display. You know, he's been a kind of a weekly staple in my sleeper column. And this week when he was screaming to be a sleeper, and I think you guys talked about him on Fantasy Football Live, and good for you guys. I just was sick of pitching Gardner Minshew every week and watching him score 15 points or 13 points or 17 points, even though we know what the Titans are. Mike Vrabel will not let you run on them. Zach Moss, 19 for 51. That's a Mike Vrabel line. And Minshew, you know, it took him overtime to get home, but 312 and a couple of touchdowns, will take it. Again, the overtime really bailed him out, because that line would have been a lot different if you take away like 65 yards in the touchdown. But still, he gets home. I'm with you, though. It really is. They hit a home run with Steichen. I'm excited about Richardson. It's really so early to say what Richardson is and isn't. He didn't even play that much in college, and then he gets hurt very early in this season. But Pittman's a monster. Zach Moss is going to be fine. This is just what the Titans do. The Titans will not let you run on them. The Colts wanted to stay balanced, and if you told me Moss was going to get 19 carries against the Titans, I wouldn't have expected many more yards than 51. I probably would have said, oh, what do you have, like 62 yards or something like that? This is what you get with him. What encouraged me, so we're totally in lockstep on Steichen, and I probably didn't even say all the words I did. I'm just happy to see some good stuff from the Titans again. DeAndre Hopkins has been living on low volume lately. Will Levis, first couple of games were good, took a step back. Not that the Colts defense is great, but you know, Levis was throwing haymaker for haymaker with Minshew. Levis, Minshew, it's the NFL on CBS. But it was a fun game. Your scoring changes. We saw a couple of Chig Okonkwo plays, you know, for your best ball teams that you've forgotten about because nobody's playing him in seasonal. I know this is obvious, but we also got reminded, and this was a theme all day, of just how important it is to have every good backup running back rostered somewhere, because Derrick Henry is having a monster day. He gets hurt. And Tennessee, we know, one, they want to run the ball, and two, they're one of those teams where it's obvious who the guy is. If the starter gets hurt, we know it's Tajay Spears, who I thought looked decent today. Not maybe electric, but I mean, look, 16 for 75 rushing. He caught four passes. If, and I don't know what the status is of Henry going forward, but if Henry's going to miss time, I would think Spears would be playable. And we're at a time now, Matt, I get asked start sit questions every week, and I'm recommending guys who I think might get 12 touches or 10 touches. If you look at somebody like Spears, who in a starting situation would be 15 to 20 touches projectable, that's so valuable, even if they're not even necessarily that efficient. And I realize he's tied to a rookie quarterback. He's tied to a lesser offense. But having ownership of a backfield all to yourself, That's gigantically important. We've been banging this drum for a while, but you really need to go through your league. And if you're a Yahoo Plus subscriber, there's a really cool thing. You can look at the depth charts, and it will show you all the number two running backs who are available in your league. I actually just realized this recently. Save you a lot of time so you don't have to go manually through all the teams. But even if you have to do that, it's worth it. Just look at your running backs on waivers and go sort by percentage rostered, something like that. That will make sense. The transaction page is a tab you should always have open because your roster construction changes now. And all of these guys, I don't want you fighting over them in Fab. I want them already on your roster because we know running backs are going to get hurt.
Yeah, Tajay Spears, that's a great call out to the Yahoo Plus feature. That's awesome, and it's perfect for this time of year. Tajay Spears is 35% rostered in Yahoo leagues, and they get the Dolphins on Monday night. Maybe that extra day helps Derrick Henry play in that game, but regardless, like, you want Tajay Spears just in case he ends up starting on Monday night against the Dolphins. And yeah, like, this is a nice sign for for the Tennessee Titans. This was a good sign for them. Will Levis takes 6 sacks. He's definitely taking a lot of sacks, and he is like very erratic as a thrower. But little life to this offense was definitely nice to see against a matchup that they definitely should have hit. All right, let's move on. Next game here, Texans 22, Broncos 17. This game was super important. It was a playoff game, basically. Whoever won this game had a really good shot to go on. The other one doesn't. I think it's pretty straightforward that the Texans, I think, are a better team than the Broncos right now. But unfortunately, there is a huge bummer in this game. Got to start it off here. Tank Dell going to miss the rest of the season with a broken fibula. He was at the bottom of kind of a scrum there for Damian Pierce's touchdown in a pile early on in this game. Nico Collins goes off. He has 9 catches. He goes crazy, almost 200 yards in this game. He was tearing it up a little bit before Tank Dell got injured. Like, it's a good thing they have Nico Collins, man, because losing Tank Dell is just it's such a bummer for a player who's played great for a team that we all really enjoy watching, and now is obviously going to miss the rest of the season. It's a huge loss, like, from a dynamism point in their offense.
Tank Dell's one of my favorite players of the year. I didn't draft him anywhere, and I'm not even sure if I roster him anywhere, although I was making up for that by playing him in DFS and propping him here and there. He's just such a fun player and showed he belonged. And when a player is that good that early in his rookie year, it's such a strong signal. Mm-hmm. And I hate that he's going to miss the rest of the season. Two fun teams, two competitive teams. I feel like the Texans are the richer man's version of what the Broncos are. Their quarterback has more upside. Their skill players are more exciting to me. And it's funny, I was asked a lot of Nico Collins questions today. And this is not a victory lap because, man, everybody who asked me about Devin Achane got the wrong advice. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But a lot of people are like, well, a couple of times I said play Collins, and sometimes I actually said don't play Collins. It depended on depth of certain questions of the listeners, but in the readers. But some people are like, well, wait a minute, don't the Broncos have a good secondary? Aren't we worried about Surtain? The thing with the cornerback wide receiver stuff is that it's so rare that a team says, okay, you got him every snap. That just doesn't happen that often. So even if a team, and I know Sauce Gardner's great, Patrick Surtain's great, then there's other cornerbacks who can really play, even as the league does everything it can to legislate defenses almost illegal, right? If you like a player and you trust his quarterback and you trust his offense's infrastructure, just play him and don't worry about who the cornerback is, who the defense is. Remember, we were all worried about the Browns. They're going to shut everybody down. And then when's the last time the Browns really stopped anybody? They didn't stop the Rams today. And I know they have some people missing. Everybody's got people missing at this point. It comes down to, like, think about weather, right? I always say that if you had a choice of taking weather seriously every time it popped up for fantasy football or just ignoring it completely, you'd be so far ahead of the game if you just ignored it completely. And that's where I'm at with this cornerback stuff. And you can tell me if you think I'm wrong. And I know, look, you and James Coe, you do some great work breaking down the nuances of what's going on with receivers and routes and defenses and coverage. You guys can speak to this much better than I can. I have no problem admitting that. But I think a lot of people were using bad process to maybe not play Nico Collins here. And I want to wipe that off if I can.
I'm with you that I told a lot of people to play Nico Collins, told some people, yeah, you can go with a different alternative if you have someone else. If you're trying to, it's one of those things, are you trying to talk yourself out of this player? Or, like, do you have reasons to talk yourself out of this player? Maybe you can use the wide receiver cornerback matchup stuff as a deep tiebreaker. In this situation, Pat Surtain did miss a couple plays, stuff like that, but there were a lot of plays where Nico A beat Pat Surtain, or he also just got matched up with other guys. Like you said, it's so rare that one corner just tracks the top receiver around, especially look, and I'm like the biggest Nico Collins guy there is out there, but like, he's still Nico Collins. He's not like prime Julio Jones. Like we are going to stop this guy at all costs. Teams might approach Nico Collins like that the rest of the season with no Tank Dell, but it was kind of like a thing where if that was the reason you were worried about Nico, I'm with you. I think that was bad process. I think you could be worried about him if you thought this was going to be like a lower scoring game. It wasn't a particularly higher scoring game. And you obviously look like you got a huge break when Tank Dell goes out, and really Nico is the only, they have other solid players on this team, but they're missing Dalton Schultz, like John Mechie, Noah Brown, Robert Woods. These guys barely made a blip in this game, and they're all role players. Like, they have two guys that are true, like we talk about the phrase target earners, like Nico Collins and Tank Dell is a, those guys are target earners. When one guy gets removed there, like, it's obviously gonna, they're gonna build the plane around Nico Collins. And I don't think that like Tank Dell's workload now is gonna suddenly go to John Mechie or to Noah Brown. I think Brown can have some better games going forward. Obviously, he has zero catches in this one. Like, that's not going to go to Robert Woods. I just think more of that load is going to be given to Nico Collins, who is just such a good player in that X receiver role.
Right. And, you know, remember when the third year used to be the breakout year for receivers? We've been treated to guys coming into the NFL pro ready, but Nico Collins followed that more traditional path. There's a lot to unpack with the Texans. I just want to say really briefly, I thought Brevin Jordan looked good. I'm 3 for 64, 4 targets. You'll take that from a tight end. He was playing because Dalton Schultz wasn't available. You'd probably need Schultz to be out for Jordan to be startable going forward. Also, just selfishly, I would like to see Bobby Slowick hang around in Houston just so CJ Stroud can have the same infrastructure for a while. But when the Texans make this kind of jump that, you know, Slowick's going to get interviewed for head coaching jobs because we just don't have enough good head coaches in football right now. So I'm curious to see what happens with that. I can't explain this backfield to you. I did tell a lot of people to play Singletary. I thought he had moved ahead of Damian Pierce in this backfield. And when Pierce was getting the work, my first thought, look, they're playing 7 or 8 games. Even with my new shiny third TV in the office, I can't watch everything. I'm thinking, well, maybe Pierce just got it going. Well, Pierce had 15 carries for 41 yards with a long of 22. You take that 22 off, we're looking at 14 for 29. I'll watch the tape tomorrow, see if I can get something granular from it. But I don't know what Singletary did to not be the first chair in this backfield. I thought it was maybe just a hot hand situation. Pierce did have some physical runs around the goal line. He almost had 2 touchdowns, but sometimes it's just the way it goes, where it looks like somebody's ascended and then the flow of the game, it goes to the other back and there's really no logical explanation for it. I feel bad for anybody who played Singletary and needed it, but that's the way the ball bounces sometimes. That's the way football go.
Yeah, we know Singletary's not a guy who's going to keep a workhorse role for a long time. Like, he's popped up for those moments with the Texans. He popped up for some of those moments with the Buffalo Bills too. I don't know what the future of Damian Pierce holds. He is 63% rostered right now. Like, I think he probably is a guy that should be added basically on every league at this point. Just because if there's a chance he's going to hold down the lead ball carrier role for this team, he's obviously going to be in good spots because we like the Texans offense. I want to just touch on the Broncos here real quick before we move off this game. You know, 3 picks for Russ, sub 60% completion. You know, this, I don't want to be disrespectful to Russ, but I mean, like, there was a lot of, they were coming like on the, you know, they were coming in a little hot, right? From like turnovers on defense. They weren't turning the ball over on offense. And I think that, you know, that kind of bit them here in this one, right? Like, this isn't a particularly dynamic or dangerous offense. They've never really established a clear-cut run game, although Russell Wilson had 10 carries for 44 yards and a touchdown in this one. You know, Courtland Sutton's given them big moments. If you look at his next-gen stats route chart in this game, it's just all, like, go routes. It is four verts, as Josh Norris said on Twitter. Like, it is just all go route stuff. You know, he's had a great season, but nobody else has really consistently stepped up for this team. I feel like this is about where the Broncos are. They're not a true playoff team. They really don't give you too many guys that can help you for fantasy. It's really just kind of Courtland Sutton, and we'll see what happens with Russ the rest of the way.
I feel like Sean Payton went into like a salvage yard and said, okay, well, here are some tires and they're not the same design. And here's part of a steering wheel and here's part of an engine, and see what you can do. And then the first month he couldn't even get the car started. And the fact that now the Broncos are on the cusp of playoff contention and Cortland Sutton has become a startable player every week for fantasy. Russell Wilson has run really well in red zone situations. And for some reason, this team just can't run the ball in for touchdowns. So the Wilson did run one in today. Javonte Williams, I'm sure that the week that Javonte Williams managers get eliminated, the next week is going to be the week that he has like a 3-touchdown game. Oh, and they're going to be like, where was, you know, no team so dances like the dance of the recently eliminated. But these are two teams really that are a year ahead of schedule when you think about it for different reasons. They have different shapes of rosters, but the whole idea was just to get better and to have some hope for 2024. And now one or two of these teams is going to make the playoffs. So that's a nod to two teams that are very well coached right now.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really fair point in terms of the timeline for these two teams. The Broncos in week 14, they draw a matchup with the Chargers. So, hey, there's a chance we could see a much better offensive output for the Broncos next week. Let's move on here. Lions 33, Saints 28. Scott, I know you were dialed in on this one. I'm dying to hear what you thought about these two teams when they matched up this week.
What a fun and kind of crazy game. The Saints are a crazy team. Any team that uses Taysom Hill as much as they do is a crazy team. Any team that has Alvin Kamara, who was the low volume efficiency darling early in his career, and now he's a high volume guy with kind of meh efficiency, but he got work in the goal line. At the goal line, scored a couple of touchdowns. I know that Carr had a good YPA in this game, and he left with an injury. I don't want to pile on anybody who leaves with an injury, but he turned the ball over twice. One of them was on a deflected pass, and I just can't get past the idea that last year Andy Dalton was better than Derek Carr. And I realize Andy Dalton's a little bit older. He's near the end of his career. So what did the Saints do? They said, thanks for the usage. Thanks for the service time. Andy Dalton, we'll see you down the road. And they threw a huge bag of money to Derek Carr, who is, I don't even think, a league average quarterback right now. And it's driving me crazy. You know, Olave did get home in this game. Kamara, as I said, you know, they made a nice comeback. I get it. And actually, this is one of Carr's better games, if you excuse him for the two sacks and the two turnovers. But the Saints are just so frustrating because we want Chris Olave should be like the wide receiver 7 right now, and he's not. And Taysom Hill's one of these guys that when they use him a lot, I mean, today he had 13 carries. He punches in a short touchdown. He had a couple of catches. Next week, he could have 2 touches. There's no consistency there. And Jimmy Graham was used in this game. They really never came up with anything. I thought maybe A.T. Perry would be an interesting sleeper. He only got 3 targets. Just something's wrong with the Saints, man. And part of it's Derek Carr, but I don't think Dennis Allen is particularly a great coach. And nice to see the Lions hold on and win this game. They're a simple team for fantasy. I know the Gibbs managers are probably a little bit frustrated. He only gets 9 touches. This is more of a Laporta game, but Laporta scored. He went off. St. Brown didn't have the usual volume, but he still had a touchdown. Montgomery punched one in and had a lot of volume. The Lions are more or less a consistent offense week to week, where I don't get asked any Lion questions anymore because everybody kind of knows what to do with those guys.
Yeah, even a guy who scores a touchdown here, like, we're not considering Jameson Williams as a fantasy option at this point, but it's just nice to see him, I mean, shot out of a cannon on his 19-yard touchdown run. I'm with you that the Lions are super simple, and man, they know how to press an easy button. Like, the matchup against the Saints defense is slot receivers and tight ends, and they hammered Sam Laporta, 9 targets, 9 catches, 140 yards, easy stuff. Right. They went to work on that weakness. That's what you love about Ben Johnson as a play caller. And really, Jared Goff is willing to hit those easy buttons. Like, we needed to see this type of outing from the Lions after what they gave us on Thanksgiving. And it was good to see. I'm with you on the Saints, man. Something smells bad here. The fan base, Tom Pelissero. I actually want to see if I can pull the tweet up here, because I've been saying on this show, like, when I've been looking around for like Derek Carr stats or anything on Twitter, it just seems like the fan base is absolutely all out on Derek Carr. Tom Pelissero said, here in New Orleans, the Saints are down 21-0 to Detroit, and fans are loudly cheering every time Taysom Hill subs in for Derek Carr, then loudly booing when Carr returns. It's a little edgy. I'm with you. I don't want to bag on Derek Carr right this second, because he is, you know, obviously he dealt with an injury. It's tough, but man, it's just, I'm with you. Something smells bad with the Saints right now. And Chris Olave, I said it to start this year, he was leaving plays on the field. Now he is like playing at his talent level these last 2 weeks, 119 yards in this game. The one deep catch that he got from Derek Carr, he had to come back for, like, right. If he had just hit him in stride, scoring a touchdown. And then he gets another big play from Jameis Winston when he comes in off a tip. Like, the guy should have intercepted it. And then old Chris Olave is the one who gets it down the field. So, like we said, bounces the ball. It be that way sometimes. So, man, yeah, it's the Saints are not a fun team to talk about. They're not a fun team to break down. And I just don't think that whatever the future is for the Saints, other than Chris Olave, it's probably not on the current roster.
Yeah, I think I want to be a year early rather than a year late on Kamara. I didn't draft him this year, and he's actually returned good fantasy value, and the suspension was lessened. But I will fade him next year. And I guarantee it. I know this isn't going to be fun. The week the managers who have Olave are eliminated, that next week, bet his props because he's going to get 237 yards and it's going to drive you crazy. Maybe this has already been established in the Keeper League and the Dynasty League streets, but is Sam Laporta the number one tight end going forward? Not just today, but like if you were in any kind of a keeper format, is he the guy you'd want?
Probably. Yeah, I think so. I mean, he just looks so good, right? Like in just such a, I know that they're definitely going to have a coaching change there from an offensive coordinator perspective. Mm-hmm. Ben Johnson will be a head coach.
You can't mess up Sam Laporta. I realize, look, Gronkowski was like this and Kelsey's like this and Kittle's like this. When a tight end gets rolling, they just look like the seniors playing against like the eighth graders. It just looks unfair. And he made a couple of one of the game salting catches was he was open and Goff made a very poor throw right behind him. And Laporta's like, oh, no problem. I got this. Caught it, ran over somebody. He just put the bounce in my step. I don't even think I have him anywhere, but I just love watching that guy play.
You're so right about Chris Olave, too. Just the final season schedule here for the New Orleans Saints. Mm. Week 14, Panthers. Week 15, Giants. Week 16, Rams. Week 17, Bucks. There's a lot of like potential smash spots in there for Chris Olave, so keep your eyes on that one. Mention the Rams. Let's move on to them here. They're the last game here in the headliners section. Rams 36, Browns 19. This game was closer than the final score made it seem. There was a lot of like chaos at the end of the game where the Rams end up, get a passing touchdown to Cooper Kupp with with 3 minutes and 51 seconds left, 2 minutes left. Kyren Williams rushes in a touchdown, 42 seconds left. Joe Flacco gets sacked for a safety. Like it got away from the Browns at the end, but this was a pretty close and competitive game. And I mean, did Joe Flacco give the Browns their best passing performance or their best quarterback play of the season? What do you think, Scott?
You know, Flacco played very poorly at the end of this game to finish with a 5.8 YPA. For the most part, he was in the high sixes. And at one point I tweeted that I thought he had played better than any Jets quarterback all season. I wasn't just trying to go LLO Jets. Remember, they were linked to Flacco when Aaron Rodgers got hurt. And I think Flacco would have been low bar to clear, but look at what the Jets have been rolling out. I think Flacco actually would have been better. This game was competitive for three quarters, and then the fourth quarter was all Rams. And there's a phrase called fan service where a TV show movie franchise will write things in there specifically to make the fans happy. And I felt like the end of this game was all fan service. Like Sean McVay is like, okay, I got you, Cooper Kupp managers. You guys are really struggling. Yeah. They schemed a touchdown for him. They schemed a 2-yard touchdown. You saw him in motion. It was a first read, easy pitch and catch. Okay, 6 for 39 still isn't really going to feed the cat, but he gets a touchdown, right? Williams had a touchdown run. He got knee was down at the 1-foot line. No problem. Even though the game's over, even though we could easily kneel on it, we're going to get Williams in the end zone. He actually did look really good today. And Puka looked fantastic. He had the long touchdown run. He had a long run from scrimmage as well. It's just nice to see the Rams back doing their thing, getting their primary guys involved. We needed prove-it games. A lot of people didn't play Kupp today. And even with that touchdown late in the game, I think it probably was the right call. We know Williams is going to be a volume monster. He gets 24 touches, opportunities in this game. Stafford has the best you can hope for with Stafford is the type of game he had today, 275, 7.5 YPA, no sacks, no interceptions, 3 touchdowns. That's about as good as you could ask for, especially against a decent Browns defense. At least Flacco on the other side, I know he's an easy punchline. He's off the couch. You know, he looked like his career was over. At least he didn't totally torpedo the off. I mean, they scored 19 points. They made a football game competitive for three quarters. I feel like he ran out of gas at the end, made a couple of ill-fated throws he shouldn't have made, but they didn't look any worse than they were with some of the other quarterbacks they've been playing. I mean, I was actually okay with Flacco for about 2 hours.
Same. And Amari Cooper missed good chunks of this game as well. And this is already an offense that, I mean, they're a team that's just been really snake bitten by injuries. Yeah, it's not been fun for Cleveland with all of the injuries that they've dealt with this year. Elijah Moore gets 12 targets. Like, Joe Flacco seems to be the only quarterback that realizes, like, I can throw the ball downfield to the guy that gets open on downfield routes. Elijah Moore, that's great. And they've obviously have history together. Elijah Moore's not a perfect player, but man, it's nice to see him actually get some downfield looks because he can run real big boy routes. He's not like, you know, Wandale Robinson or something like that. So that, if you want to talk about like that relationship, that is definitely there. You know, maybe that continues. Yeah, it's just tough. It's not a great offensive ecosystem. Otherwise, like, Jerome Ford is definitely going to continue to be involved as a big time part of this passing game with Joe Flacco in there. But want to talk about the Rams here. You mentioned Cooper Kupp gets the fan service touchdown. I love that. Brilliant, brilliant use of fan service by you, Scott. That is a great analogy. He gets the fan service touchdown very late in the game. Like I said, 3 minutes and 51 seconds left in the game. I mean, there's been a changing of the guard here, I think, officially. We can say that, right? Like, I highlighted it a lot this week. Like, the designed touches are no longer going to Cooper Kupp. They're going to Puka Nacua. Puka left this game twice. I think once with cramps, and then another time he made a beautiful catch, like, towards the sideline, downfield route, awesome play. He came down hard on his shoulder. I thought he was, like, out for the game. I thought he was done. And he came back, made a couple more plays. He's awesome, man. He is so good as a route runner. He's so good in the open field, too. He's more explosive than you think. It's clear he is the lead dog right now in this passing game, not Cooper Kupp.
Well said. He is more explosive than you think. On his long touchdown, very early in that play, it was evident he was going to take it to the house. And I wouldn't have felt that way about him 2 months ago.
No, man, he's a fun player. Is he the number one receiver right now from this draft class, you think?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think we're at that point. All right, let's move on to the rest of the games here from week 13, starting with Dolphins 45, Commanders 15. We teased this one a couple times here, Scott. What do you got?
So Miami's got a top five offense, probably a top three offense. Washington has one of the worst defenses in football, so Dolphins, big favorite. You think it could easily get out of hand. And it's 31-7 at halftime. And Tyreek Hill's gone bonkers. He's well over 100. He scored a couple of touchdowns. And Tua's got a perfect quarterback rating. And the only guy who's not really doing much is Devon Achane has 5 touches for 10 yards. Okay. So are the Commanders going to keep up? Is it just put everybody on ice for the Dolphins? Well, in the second half, Tua stopped throwing the ball. And Hill only had a couple of targets. And I think Waddle only had one catch in the second half. But there was this drive that Achane had at the end of the game where it was maybe halfway through the fourth quarter and Mike White came in. Tua was getting a hat on. And I think Tyreek Hill was out of the game. And they gave the ball to Achane 6 straight times, 8 times in all. He scores a touchdown inside of the 2-minute warning, his second touchdown of the half. And so a running back who is, 185 pounds or something like that. I mean, they have a kind of an undersized running back room anyway, because we know Raheem Mostert's not a big guy either. But Achane's missed some time with injuries, got hurt early 2 weeks ago, didn't play last week. And yet when they're salting away a game, they're up by a million points and there's no chance of Washington coming back. There they were, dialing the same number over and over again. And look, I get it. This isn't a high school team. You don't have 100 players on the sidelines. Somebody has to carry the ball. You have to run out the clock somehow. If I were the Dolphins, I think I'd let Jeff Wilson handle those touches. Now, look, I'll admit, full disclosure, I was asked a bunch of questions about Achane today, and I wanted to see a prove-it game. And halfway through, I thought, oh, I think I gave people the right advice. They're kind of going easy on Achane. And then he was the closer today. He get all the garbage time work. I didn't see that coming. Who am I to say Mike McDaniel was wrong? It worked. Achane, as far as I know, didn't get hurt. I just did not see that coming. On the flip side, bad game for Sam Howell. I can live with that. What frustrates me, Matt, is it's Washington throws the ball so much. They didn't throw it that much today because they had like 11 first downs. They couldn't sustain offense. But in a year where Washington is passing to set up the pass more often than not, you can't play anybody. I mean, I put out Curtis Samuel's a sleeper, 4 for 65 on 5 targets. That's helpful. That didn't win anybody their game, but whatever. You probably had modest expectations.
a bagel for Terry McLaurin on three targets. I've given up on Jahan Dotson a long time ago. Not that they're bad players, and not even that Howell's a bad player. There's just a disconnect between Howell and McLaurin, between Howell and Dotson. Sometimes I think the offense is a little bit too splintered. Obviously, it's Bieniemy's first year here. I don't know exactly what is the issue. I just know that there's talent, and I don't think Sam Howell is hopeless. And if you told me that Sam Howell was going to throw a million passes, again, not today, but over the season, and I'd be this disappointed in McLaurin or Dotson, and there wasn't an injury to explain, I'd be like, get out of here. That's no way it's going to happen. But here we are. Washington's a carnival, but it's a one-sided carnival. Their offense never gets invited.
Yeah, there was – I've watched football for a long time. You know, I don't know that there was any more like predictable smash spot than Tyreek Hill versus this defense, right? Like that just – all-time smash spot. It was a fantastic like matchup. Everything was there. We knew that was going to happen.
They could have broken records if they really wanted. They said, you know what, let's make this today. Today, Tyreek Hill takes Flipper Anderson out of the NFL consciousness. They could have done it. There's no doubt.
You texted me like, oh yeah, he could probably have 300 yards if they wanted him to. Shoot, you probably could have gone for 2,000 yards in this. Like, he could have hit the 2,000 on the season today if they really wanted to do it. That is how much of a mismatch that was. And you're so right about the Washington offense. You know, people started giving me crap like, oh, you're too hard on Sam Howell just because your guys aren't producing. And well, number one, Curtis Samuel's my guy and he leads the receiver room in production. But look, it has nothing to do with fantasy football at this point. Like they're scheduled to pick fourth in the draft. Sam Howell isn't sniffing the top 15 in any efficiency metric. Like, I couldn't care less that he's leading the NFL in passing yards right now. It's a bad offense and it's a frustrating offense. And if I'm Josh Harris, like the new owner there, there's nothing here. I mean, Sam Howell, if you don't get one of like Drake May or Caleb Williams, you can bring Sam Howell back. It just constrict the offense and give him less to do and less to process. Like, and you can probably get away with like a Baker Mayfield tier quarterback out of Sam Howell, or you can maybe, and you can give him some more competition. Sure. I think that's fine. But like, I wouldn't say that there's anything here that if you're a new ownership, like you're looking to just bring back and roll with next year. I think it's a full reset in Washington.
Totally agree.
All right. Cardinals 24, Pittsburgh 10. Scott, this game was weird because it was start, it was stop. There was so much with the weather. It eventually did finish up. And I mean, for the Steelers, this is tough because this is a classic, like Steelers play down to their level of competition here. They get beat by a team they should absolutely not lose to. And on top of that, they lose Kenny Pickett for 2 to 4 weeks. You know, he's going to have an ankle surgery. It's rough because I thought the Steelers coming out of that win over the Bengals were kind of putting things together, but this is a bad break for them.
Yeah, I've always made the joke that the Steelers have one touchdown pass to that's their pie. You know, divvy it up. Deontay Johnson got a late touchdown in this game from Mitch Trubisky, but I never feel confident playing him. I never feel confident playing Pickens. Pat Freiermuth had a huge game last week, and this week, you know, he goes back to 3 for 29. And as much as Kenny Pickett was hard to trust, was hard to watch, nobody wants to watch Mitch Trubisky. So this offense, they're going to try to win like several teams. They're going to try to win 13-10 or 10-7 or 9-6 every week. And it's going to sink all these guys. You can't play any of these guys proactively. I'm sure I'm going to be asked a bunch of Najee Harris, Jalen Warren questions. It's funny how often they're on the same team. And I don't know that there's any right answers here. On the Cardinals side, Trey McBride, terrific. James Conner got goal line equity in this game, punched in a couple of them, and I feel bad. Our friend and our editorial leader, Jason Kabaka, was ping-ponging back and forth a couple of weeks ago about, should I go get Kyler Murray? He was worried about Geno Smith, which I thought was reasonable, so was I. And I think I kind of talked him into a Kyler Murray trade, but for Kyler Murray to be fantasy viable, we need him rushing in touchdowns, not James Conner. So I think I may have got my boss. He probably had a one seed when we made that trade. Jason, we might need to win in the wild card round.
I'll tell you what, though. Kyler Murray loves him some Trey McBride, man. That was apparent watching this game. It's been kind of a building storyline, not just from the stat sheet, but the way they talk about Trey McBride, the way like every broadcast crew who, you know, talks to the quarterback talks about the relationship between Murray and Trey McBride. He wasn't able to score a touchdown. They went right back to him on the next play. So Trey McBride, man, is just set up to soar. Obviously, Zach Ertz was released, but Trey McBride's another one of these dynasty tight ends. We talked about Sam LaPorta earlier. He has definitely got to be pretty close to the top of the rankings.
Are Kyler Murray and Marquise Brown denying that they ever went to college together? I mean, they're supposed to have this great connection.
Crazy, yeah. He got hurt. Works. He got hurt in this game, but still, mm-hmm. it hasn't been there the whole time. I think maybe Murray is like his deep ball is not back yet, but I don't know, man. It's wild.
We should also mention that the one really good deep ball that Murray threw was a gorgeous touchdown pass to Rondell Moore that got wiped out by penalty. So unfortunately, if you needed Rondell Moore, your day was made, and then your day was taken away. But man, you know, Kyler, I feel like I screwed this up because he looked a lot better than I expected. My expectations were pretty reasonable when he came back. He played better than I expected when he came back. And then I think maybe I overcompensated with what I expected going forward. Now he's not every week people ask me what to do with Kyler Murray. And I'll be honest with you, I don't have any great answers right now. I do know this because and I love McBride too. And if Brown got hurt, that's, you know, to some degree an excused absence. But Kyler Murray can't be fantasy viable if he's not giving you a chunk running. I mean, I need 25 to 35 rushing yards a week and like maybe a 45% chance at a rushing touchdown. If he can't do that, I don't want to play him for fantasy.
I'm with you. In this receiver room with Michael Wilson not playing and now Marquise Brown, like he's been banged up the last 2 weeks, it's a bad room. I mean, Greg Dortch, Rondale Moore, like Trey McBride is having to carry all this load because these guys are not, he's a good player, but like these guys are not NFL viable. Well, like I said, weird game. With all the stop and starts, but somehow the Steelers are so Steelers in this game that it makes a lot of sense. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Bucks 21, Panthers 18. Yeah, I don't know. What do you want to say here, Scott? I mean, Bryce Young, still a disaster. Chuba Hubbard carries the ball 25 times. Jonathan Mingo's at least doing something in the stat sheet. Okay. And Mike Evans and Rashad White smashed, as expected.
I actually thought this game for a 21-18 game gave us a lot of fantasy utility because Tampa Bay, unfortunately, I did have a Kate Otten recommendation on the sleeper page and he didn't do a thing. He didn't even get targeted, but Godwin snuck in a touchdown on a day where he didn't have any catches. Okay, fine. Mike Evans keeps galloping his way to the Hall of Fame. Rashad White gets touches, as many touches as he can handle, and usually a touchdown every week. They're all very playable. And on the Carolina side, you made a needed Chuba Hubbard, who's at least proven that he's better than Miles Sanders, and they've rewarded Hubbard as such. He gets the two touchdowns today. It's nice to see Mingo do something. Every time I had Tampa Bay in my Survivor League, and Tampa Bay gets up by a couple of scores, and then Carolina, even when they put together a touchdown drive, every snap is with 1 second left on the play clock, and the drive took like 7.5 minutes. It reminded me of that Donovan McNabb drive in the Super Bowl where it's like they're trying to kill the clock when they're trying to have a comeback. You know, everything is so labored. It feels like it's first and 15 for these guys, not first and 10. There's no, we always talk about the easy button. What's the easy button in Carolina? I don't see it, but at least the stuff that you need, I mean, whatever, maybe you needed Thielen. He didn't do a lot today, but most of the stuff you might've needed in this game, at least it came in.
One of my favorite bets that I made in week 13 was on BetMGM. They had an over under on combined receiving yards between Mike Evans and Adam Thielen at 129.5. And I was doing a stream with my buddy James Coe, who you mentioned earlier. And I was like, dude, Mike Evans is going to get that all on his own. Like that was easy. That was the easiest bet of week 13. Besides Tyreek Hill overs, that was the easiest bet of week 13.
Well, it's like Family Feud where they do the fast money and the first person gets like 185 and then the second person only needs to get 20. Mike Evans got the 162. It's like, okay, Thielen, you only need, you know, whatever, you get 25. They wouldn't have won the money on Family Feud, but you know, Mike Evans got the 162 on his own.
Yeah. Mike Evans, what a great player. I hope the Bucks are able to retain him. I know that there's a lot of teams we probably would like to see you know, Mike Evans play for, but man, he's just like a buck for life, bro. I really hope they're able to.
I also love that gear. Terrell Owens had this gear that went on that touchdown that he had when he catches the ball and he's like at the 35 or the 40 yard line. He's in his mind. He's like, I'm scoring on this play.
Yes. So true. That's a love great, that.
And,
a great
and the great acrobatics right around the pylon. And he keeps his hands on the ball. Doesn't fumble it. We don't get that stupid fumble out of the end zone stuff. Yeah. Mike Evans can retire tomorrow and I would back him as a Hall of Famer and you know, over 1,000 yards. Again, only Jerry Rice has done it more seasons in a row to start his career. We are going to tell future generations that we watched Mike Evans and it was glorious.
I probably don't want to admit to my future children or grandchildren that I watched these next two games in the week 13 slate, mm-hmm. but they are games that I sort of kind of watched here, starting with Falcons Oh my God. Falcons 13, Jets 8. Scott, you could have given me like almost any under, like over under you want to live bet during this game while I was watching. I was like, you could take anything. I mean, honestly, anything. You could, and in good conscience, you could be like, yeah, this game will go under that because the Jets are so far down in the muck right now. And no team is more willing to get down in the muck with you than the Atlanta Falcons, who, I mean, don't come away from this game. They come away from this game with great playoff odds, right? Because now that the Saints lost today, I think they have a 61% chance, according to New York Times, of winning the NFC South. So that's great for them. They're going nowhere. Their offense is miserable. Desmond Ridder, 44% completion rate. Bijan Robinson goes nowhere. Kyle Pitts leads the team in receiving. Congratulations. 51 yards. And the Jets are just, I mean, like I said, they're toast. Trevor Siemian finally gets in there. Who cares?
Yours like to see a Jets safety as you are a Garrett Wilson touchdown. I think they're both at 3 for the season.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, the Jets have 3 safety. I mean, as in 2 points for the Jets, and Garrett Wilson is 3 touchdowns. So that should be the prop.
Position, not safety, the position.
I mean, you know, they didn't see Aaron Rodgers getting hurt on the fourth snap of the season. I get it. And I guess they thought they could maybe fix Zach Wilson, and you know, Tim Boyle didn't ask for this, and Trevor Siemian didn't ask for this. And I do think Joe Flacco would be better, but whatever. He wouldn't be that much better. Their season would still be shipwrecked. The only thing I want to say, everything you said about the game, I'll co-sign, and nobody needs to hear it again. But hang chin up, Bijan Robinson, people. Buccaneers, Panthers, Colts, Bears. Those are the next 4 games. I still think Bijan Robinson is going to be on a lot of championship rosters.
I'm with you. Ian Rapoport reported this morning that Aaron Rodgers is unlikely to play the season despite having his practice window
open. No kidding. Aaron Rodgers does not break science. I'm glad to know that.
Congratulations. We can all stop living in fantasy land now, and now we just need to wonder, like, can the Jets actually put some players around Aaron Rodgers, or is he just going to make them put all his buddies around him again? So that's our big offseason question for them. That brings us to the final game here of week 13, and it is a deserved ending. Chargers 6, Patriots 0. Chargers 6, Patriots 0. I mean, this is a real score of a real NFL game, Scott.
On a day where it rained at so many NFL stadiums, I felt like this game was played in like a snowstorm. It just, once the Chargers get up 6-0, I'm like, that they'll probably do it. It's just hard. Look, we gave up on the Patriots a long time ago. You hate to see Stevenson get hurt. Even with Ezekiel Elliott, the backfield to himself, you know, 21 touches for 92 yards. Obviously, they're not going to score a touchdown on this Patriots team. It's just hard to watch the Chargers. We know Austin Eckler's been playing hurt pretty much all season. He's doing the best he can, but it was a really tough slog for him today. How do you spin Quentin Johnson? 5 for 52 is nice, 7 targets, but he had the one soul-crushing drop that seems to be part of his game. Nah, I just, you know, as a Patriots fan, I'm glad they lose. I know this. I'll give you one bet to set right now. They're going to beat the Jets. I think this is going to be the Belichick last season with the Patriots. Everybody seems to feel that way. It's time for the divorce. He's going to play the Jets. The Patriots are the last game of the season, and there's nothing. Bill Belichick hates the Jets the way a 5-year-old hates, like, vegetables. There's no way they're losing to the Jets. I hope they lose every game until then because they need to get a franchise quarterback here. But so I'd continue to bet against the Patriots or bet unders or just not watch them, ignore them if you want. I talked about the third TV in the Pianowski household in my office today. Matt, I had access to 6 of 7 football games at 1 o'clock. Guess which game I chose to basically not watch unless it popped up on Red Zone, the Chargers and the Patriots. And I don't think I missed anything. I'm not sure I'm going to rewatch it. You want to say something nice about Quentin Johnson? Hey, 5 for 52 is something. I know he had the bad drop, but at least they're giving him things to do.
It's something. I mean, it's tough when like 5 for 52 is a sign for life, but that's where we're at with Quentin Johnson at this point. My takeaway from this game is the Chargers are a hideously bad offense, and somehow the Patriots are worse, who are now going to be without Ramondre Stevenson probably for a couple of weeks here because he is dealing with an ankle injury. So I think we are firmly like, we don't care about the Patriots at this point. So that's
Can we talk people to Zeke Elliott? Let's see. So they get the Steelers. Good luck. The Chiefs. Good. They're on a bad schedule. The Patriots get the Steelers at Pittsburgh. So you know, Zeke, I give you Zeke stats right now. 17 carries, 43 yards, 2 catches, 9 yards, no touchdown. Then they play the Chiefs, which is so unappealing to network television that they flexed it off Monday night. You can do that now? They said, no, we do not want Patrick Mahomes on Monday night because the Patriots will ruin that. So they took it away from us. Thank you. They saved us from ourselves.
Justifiably. Yeah. Yeah.
Then they go to Denver, famous house of horrors for the Patriots through the years, even when they were good. And the Broncos, well, you can't run on the Broncos. So maybe if Zeke or Stevenson, Stevenson's probably done for the year, but maybe Zeke to be quasi playable. And then the payback with the Bills, who somehow lost to the Patriots, and they're going to rue that game. But that I'll give you the final score of that game right now. Bills 42, Patriots 3.
On that note, I think that's going to do it for week 13. Hell of a show, Scott. I mean, 6-0, an actual NFL game. I can't believe that happened.
It's a tough week with all those buys. Man. It's tough not to have six teams in play. What did the NFL do? The NFL knows it's based on two things. It's based on fantasy and it's based on people might want to put a dollar or two on the game. And they put six teams on bye in week 13. That's what you do to us? That's just not right.
It is not right. But it is what they did to us, and that's what we have to live with, and they have to live with. So there it is. Again, that is going to do it for us today. Be sure to tune in on Tuesday where Andy and I will talk panic meter, but we're going to introduce a new fantasy playoff panic meter. Secret lists are back. You can still send some submissions to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. We'll also talk top waiver pickups. Yeah, we're going to need some help after this week. A lot of injuries, that is for sure. Until then, we're out.